Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
And we're very pleased to welcome to Lutheran Radio UK Dr. Don Matzett. He is the author of Catherine Parr, Opportunist, Queen, and Reformer, published by Amberley Press in Gloucestershire. And he also is a modern updater of Queen Catherine Parr's Lamentations of a Sinner. And I highly recommend these books to you, our listeners. And we're very pleased to have Dr. Matzett with us. Don, thank you for joining us.
John, it's a pleasure.
The first question that comes to my mind is, how does a retired Missouri Synod pastor living in the middle of America become interested in Catherine Parr, the sixth wife of Henry VIII?
First of all, I watched a program on Netflix about Henry VIII and his six wives. And I checked them out, and I was reading a Wikipedia article. It was only a one-page article on Catherine Parr, and it said that she believed the Lutheran doctrine of justification by faith. And I said, wow, a former Queen of England believed the Lutheran doctrine of justification by faith. And it said that she expressed that in her book, The Lamentation of a Sinner. Well, John, I looked for that book. I mean, that's in the public domain. That was published in 1547, but I could find it nowhere on the internet. And finally, I discovered it in a large anthology published by Dr. Janelle Miller of the University of Chicago. So I ordered the book, and I read The Lamentation. I was amazed by it, but Dr. Miller had put it into, I guess, King James English, if you will. And so I thought it would be a good idea to revise this thing and put it into a modern English. So I got her permission, and I did so. And I put out that little self-published book that you spoke of, Catherine Parr's The Lamentation of a Sinner. And I was amazed by how popular that became, especially by readers in the UK. I imagine about 200 people in the UK ordered that book, and I did no promotion. So I added a biography to it, circulated it through a couple of American publishers, but they weren't interested because obviously they had never heard of Catherine Parr. So I tried a couple publishers in the UK, and Amberley decided they would pick it up, and thus they published the work Catherine Parr, Opportunist, Queen, Reformer. My initial interest, John, was that she discovered justification by faith, which Henry VIII was very much opposed to, but Catherine Parr discovered it, and I thought that was somewhat amazing. When Luther discovered it, it changed the face of Europe. When Catherine Parr discovered it, nobody was aware of it. So I think it's incredible that this woman came to that conclusion that she was righteous, not because of her good works, but because of the righteousness of Christ.
Now, before we actually talk about Catherine Parr, we've got a little bit of history, I think, to get to. Would you mind just giving us perhaps a brief sketch of Henry VIII's life, how he came to the throne, some of the history there, and then actually how he maybe got together with Catherine Parr?
Where do you begin? Well, you have to begin with Henry VII and his oldest son, Arthur. And Henry VII brokered a deal with Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain that Arthur would marry Catherine of Aragon. Well, he did, and he died, though, at the age of 16 from the sweating sickness. So Henry VII decided that he would marry his second son, Henry, to Catherine of Aragon, because he didn't want to send the dowry back. And but Henry at that time was 14, and he had no intention of marrying a 20-year-old woman. But I guess they became friends. And when Henry the Seventh died, Henry the Eighth said, yes, I will marry Catherine. Well, they were married for 24 years. Catherine had one child, Mary, who became the infamous Bloody Mary. But after 24 years, Catherine, well, how would I put it? She was only about 4 feet tall, but she was now 4x4, if you get what I mean. But Henry, you know, was still a young gentleman, middle-aged man, fell in love with Anne Boleyn. And so he wanted the marriage to Catherine of Aragon to be annulled, but Pope Clement would not allow for that annulment. And so, because of the influence of Thomas Cranmer, Henry put the issue before the universities, and most of them agreed, even though I guess they were bribed, that it was okay for Henry to have his marriage to Catherine annulled, because Leviticus said that a man should not marry his brother's wife. So the marriage, the Pope refused to annul it, so Henry said, okay, I'll marry Anne Boleyn. I will become head of the Church of England. So Thomas Cranmer annulled the marriage to Catherine of Aragon, and he married Henry to Anne Boleyn. And Henry VIII, that would be in 1543, became Archbishop of Canterbury. And then in 1534, you had the Act of Supremacy, where Henry was declared the supreme head of the Church of England. Now he had a problem, of course, as to what kind of a church was he going to have. Initially, he retained most of the Roman Catholic theology, but he changed many of the practices. So why did Henry want his marriage to Catherine annulled? There's many, many issues. Was his conscience bothering him because he had married his brother's wife? But why did it take 24 years for his conscience to finally tell him he had done something wrong? Was he madly in love with Anne Boleyn? Well, 3 years later, he cut her head off. Did he want a male heir? I believe that, from my perspective anyway, and many, I'm sure some English historians would disagree with me, but it seemed to me that Henry's major motivation for marrying Anne Boleyn, becoming the head of the Church of England, because he wanted a male heir, which he did not have. And of course, Anne Boleyn gave birth to Elizabeth, and he still didn't have his male heir. But he became head of the Church of England because he said to the Pope, we don't need you here anymore. Now it's my church.
When Lutherans talk about a Reformation, they think of Luther posting the 95 Theses on the castle church door in Wittenberg. And you talk about two Reformations. Can you perhaps describe what you mean by those two different ones? And hopefully I've kicked you off in the right direction.
There are historians like Roland Bainton who say that the major Reformation in England was not Lutheran, but it was based on the thinking of Desiderius Erasmus. Erasmus and Luther originally agreed over the issue of indulgences, and that was the primary issue with the 95 Theses. Now, Erasmus, a good Roman Catholic, noted primarily for his translation of the New Testament from the original manuscripts, the production of the Greek New Testament. But Erasmus was in his own right a reformer. He didn't want to deal with the theology of Rome because he felt it was historical and that it should not be changed. But he wanted to get rid of many of the practices the superstitions, the abuses that were in the monasteries, or as some would put it, the bells and smells, if you know what I mean. And Henry VIII was trained by an Erasmian tutor, as also was Catherine Parr, by the way. And many would say that the primary Reformation in England was based on the thinking of Erasmus, to change the practices of the church and not necessarily the theology. And of course that changed later with the coming of the 39 Articles. And Erasmus was a real reformer. Catherine Parr was very much influenced by the thinking of Erasmus. And his idea was that the Bible should be put into the hands of the common people and that they should learn the very simple philosophy of Jesus and follow the example of Jesus. And that became the Reformation that was touted by Erasmus. And so there were two things happening here in England in the 16th century. You had the reform of Erasmus and the reform of Luther. Well, while Erasmus wanted to retain the doctrine of Rome and change the practice, Luther wanted to blow the whole thing out of the water, if you know what I mean, by just reforming everything. And so there were times, there was a time, of course, when Luther and Erasmus parted company. And it was over the issue of the bondage of the will, which was a primary thesis that Luther had written. And Erasmus believed that man was capable, by his own free will, of believing in Jesus and following the philosophy of Jesus. And of course, Luther vehemently rejected that notion. So you had these two reformations. And many of the biographers that I read, John, regarding Catherine Parr, they speak of her as a reformer when she married Henry. This is not true. Catherine Parr might have been a reformer, but it was a reformation that was touted by Erasmus and not by Luther. Catherine Parr was Erasmian in her thinking.
Again, I think it's interesting to note, because you talk about the difference between the Lutheran Reformation and the English Reformation. A lot of folks don't realize that Martin Luther and Henry VIII were contemporaries, and they actually had a number of correspondences.
In 1520, Luther came out with his work, The Babylonian Captivity of the Church, in which he questioned the seven sacraments. Well, Henry responded to Luther, calling him that little monk who was spewing out against the Pope, and he wrote his thesis, The Defense of the Seven Sacraments. Well, historians question whether Henry actually wrote that. Later, Thomas More stated that he took Henry's material and he organized it. But anyway, Henry's thesis, The Defense of the Seven Sacraments, caused the Pope to give him a title, a defender of the church, a defender of the faith. Well, Luther responded to Henry with a very, very, I don't know, how would you put it? It was not a nice response. He used some pretty heavy language, which Luther often had a tendency to do, in defining King Henry. What is interesting here, John, is that Christian I, who was a king of Denmark, told Martin Luther that he should apologize to Henry for the way that he responded to him. Because Christian said that Henry might be open to the Reformation. So Luther wrote a 2-page apology begging Henry for forgiveness. And by the way, this is not included in the American version of Luther's works. I found this in an 1897, newsletter. This apology that Luther wrote to Henry. Well, Henry was not interested in the Reformation. So he took Luther's apology, translated it into English, and had it published throughout the land, making Luther look kind of like a fool. And Luther later said to one of his friends, "I made a major mistake. The information I received was not right." So there became a very interesting relationship here between Henry and Luther. And then later, when they wanted Luther's opinion regarding the annulment of the marriage of Henry and Catherine, Luther said, "By no means should that marriage be annulled." And so Henry didn't get Luther's response or his approval when it came to his desire to have his marriage annulled with Catherine of Aragon. So a very interesting relationship. But what is interesting, John, is that Henry liked Philip Melanchthon. Philip Melanchthon was Luther's right-hand man. And because Melanchthon was a humanist, and Melanchthon wrote this very excellent treatise on Lutheran doctrine called the Loci Communes, or the local places of theology. And he dedicated the second edition of that work to Henry VIII. And Henry sent him a pretty good stipend for doing that. And it was more than Melanchthon would earn as being a professor at Wittenberg for a year. And so Melanchthon wanted to go to England, but the elector in Germany, John Frederick, did not want Melanchthon to go to England because he was afraid that he would compromise too much in his discussions with Henry. So Melanchthon never got to England. And one of the Lutherans in England accused John Frederick of not sending Melanchthon to England because that might have changed Henry's mind regarding the Lutheran Reformation. So there's a lot of fascinating history here.
And as I understand it, there's a lot of politics underneath it as well. You have the Smalcaldic League who wanted Henry to join, and that played into the whole situation too, didn't it?
Well, that was after the death of Jane Seymour. That was Henry's third wife. And she gave birth to Edward, who became Edward VI. And Thomas Cromwell, who at that time was Henry's Lord Chancellor, believed that Henry would be looking for a wife number 4. And so Thomas Cromwell brokered a deal so that Henry would marry Anne of Cleves, who was from Bavaria, from Germany. Now, what is interesting here is that John Frederick, the Elector of Saxony in Germany, who was a proponent of the Reformation, a defender of Martin Luther, was married to Sybil. Sybil was the sister of Anne of Cleves. So when Henry married Anne of Cleves, Henry VIII and John Frederick for 10 months became brothers-in-law, which is a fascinating little unknown fact of history. But Anne of Cleves stayed in England. She became a very popular figure. But as a result of Thomas Cromwell, messing up all of these, bringing Anne of Cleves to England and the marriage taking place. As a result, Cromwell lost his head. Henry had him beheaded. And that essentially was the end of any attempt to bring the Lutheran Reformation into England. Because after that, Henry became conservative. He came out with the six statements establishing Roman Catholic theology in England. And one of the interesting things here, John, is that in those six articles, priests were not allowed to marry. Well, Thomas Cranmer, who was the Archbishop of Canterbury at this time, was married. And so he had to pack up his German wife and send her back to Germany. So a lot of fascinating. I think the history in the 16th century in England is the most fascinating history of all, because of all of the little things that were going on behind the scenes.
And as you say, very, very fascinating. Do we have any evidence? Was Anne of Cleves a Lutheran? Was she influenced by Lutheran theology, or was that nothing to do with her?
Well, she was not religious, so to speak. Many say that she did hold to Roman Catholic theology, but she did accept Henry as the supreme head of the church. But Anne of Cleves was not a, how would you put it, a religious person. This was a political move. Henry VIII was afraid of Charles, who was the ruler of the Holy Roman Empire. And Henry, through Cromwell, wanted to align England with the small Chaldic League that was headed up by Elector John Frederick, to make an alliance here against Spain. And so it was more of a political move than it was a religious move. But in aligning England with the German Small Chaldic League, would have opened up England to the Lutheran Reformation, because there would be a union here. But it never really came to pass.
Don, with just a few minutes left, I mean, we're taking our stroll through history here, and we've looked at the sort of first four wives of Henry VIII. We've got Catherine of Aragon, we've got Anne Boleyn, we've got Jane Seymour, we've got Anne of Cleves. Now, can you tell us what happens next? Who's next in line?
Well, Henry now had a midlife crisis, and he married 17-year-old Catherine Howard. And that did not last long. Even, you know, Henry really loved this teenage girl. It was his new attempt at youth, even though at this time he was a very large man. He had an ulcerated leg that was injured in jousting when he was married to Anne Boleyn, and that ulcer on his leg never healed. It was rather smelly, as people put it. And so he married this 17-year-old girl. Well, it was discovered that Catherine Howard was not going to be content to simply be married to Henry. So she had an affair with Henry's groom, Thomas Culpepper. And she had other affairs before that. Well, when that was discovered and it was brought to the attention of Henry, well, that would be treason. And little 17-year-old Catherine Howard was beheaded. Well, after Catherine Howard met her demise, Henry was now searching for a new wife. I guess he had a dinner where there were 23 women involved, and he could not find a new wife out of those 23 women. But at this time, there was this woman who had been married twice before. She had been married to Lord Latimer, who died, and she returned to court. Her name was Catherine Parr, and Henry caught her eye. But Catherine Parr at this time was romantically involved with Thomas Seymour, who was a rogue. He was an admiral, a very eligible bachelor. And Henry caught the eye of Catherine Parr and said, I would like you to be my wife. And he sent Thomas Seymour packing to Holland as an ambassador to get the competition out of the way. And that brought together Henry and Catherine Parr. And that now opens up a whole new story.
And it's at this cliffhanger that you've left us at, Don. We're going to bid a fond farewell for this week, but we would like to invite you back and our audience back to carry on this recap of Henry VIII and Catherine Parr, and we'll talk more about what she wrote next week, if you'll join us.
Very good. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.